Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up a little bit later in the hour, Chef Diana Davila from Tocaya in Logan Square, Midwest Mexican. It's on the Bon Appetit Top 50 Restaurants, New Restaurants in America list. And she's going to be in studio coming up here at 9:30. Great to have her. At 10 o'clock tonight in Studio 435, live music from Even and Blackouts, acoustic punk music. John Jughead Pearson, of course, the legendary guitar player for Screeching Weasel, great Chicago punk band. This is his project, and it's a project that had been left behind, but it's resurged, reunited. We'll Even in Blackouts tonight in the 10 o'clock hour. Well, comedian and actor Jerry Lewis died yesterday at the age of 91. Lewis is famous for his stage act, of course, but also his prolific career in film that gave us a huge hit, The Nutty Professor, back in 1963. Lewis made several films and balanced his on-screen, over-the-top persona with an off-screen, cantankerous reputation. And, of course, he was loved in France. And he did telethons. That's all I know about Jerry Lewis.
That's it?
That's it. And joining me tonight to talk about the comedian's legacy and to fill us in on who Jerry Lewis was, Chicago Tribune film critic Michael Phillips. Michael, good to see you, man.
Good to see you, Justin.
Great to have you back. All right, so, I mean, Pete and I were kind of talking right at the top that, you know, my generation, I don't really have an affinity for Jerry Lewis. Beyond the telethons, there's not much that,
right.
that sort of played to
it. It's a little like, for a lot of people, even though they know he's big, you know, it's more like Jerry Lewis, not really what was his, but Jerry Lewis, what? You know, what was that? What was that screaming and the lady and the, all you know, and all you know is that he, if you watched the telethon at all as a kid or, you know, kind of wandered into a couple hours of it on Labor Day, you know, and you happen to see him sing You'll Never Walk Alone at the end and cry, and he really knew how to, like, yank the tears with that. And all you felt like was, like, this can't be good show business.
Right.
It may be effective fundraising.
But it can't be good show business.
It's not really. But, you know, you go back, and I'm a little older than you. You know, I'm 97. But if you go back, I mean, I was a comedy nerd as a kid. I remember seeing the Martin and Lewis movies on television. You know, Channel 9 on the weekends,
yep.
mostly. So you sort of get a sense of, like, you know, when you're a kid, you really respond, a lot of us did, to Lewis's sort of like that infantile 9-year-old. What was the band name you just mentioned? Screaming Weasel or Screeching Weasel?
Screeching Weasel, yeah.
That's the Screeching Weasel. He was, Jerry Lewis was the original Screeching Weasel. And, you know, that was the whole appeal. He was like this, you know, this Arrested Development kid. And somehow, and this was, I wasn't there in 1946 when he first took the stage with Dean Martin, an unknown crooner at the time, but somehow the mixture of this sort of sexy, really relaxed, and turned out to be a very good actor later, Dean Martin, straight man, but not boring straight man, and he could really sing, mix that with Jerry Lewis, this sort of unleashed, unchained, screaming weasel, right? And they tore up every room they ever played live, including a lot of clubs in Chicago.
I mean, it's amazing reading today just about his stage presence, not only just with Dean Martin, but he went on and played Vegas for years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for his films, I mean, he really, they caught a wave in I guess it would be the 60s, early 60s. Those films kind of, all of them did okay, none of them bombed, but they caught a wave of this sort of buddy kind of flick that people were interested in.
Right. Well, and Martin and Lewis were just huge for 10 years. And really, I think that the success they had, Justin, you know, I think kind of if you look ahead to how long bands stay together, rock bands, you know, half a generation later, that's how long Martin and Lewis stuck together, 10 years. And then they couldn't, I think they were good and sick of each other, and they couldn't, it was from 46 to 56.
Wow.
And they were huge for five of those 10. And they were huge in a new way that no comedy team had ever been huge, i.e. a new medium of television, huge on the Colgate Comedy Hour. Big on radio. You know, every movie they made like three a year. They really ground through a lot of movies between 1949 and 56. And that was just a breadth of show business success that no team had ever had. And I don't know, comedy teams are weird. I mean, like Abbott and Costello were around 10 years earlier. They lasted big, you know, 10, 12 mm-hmm. years. Martin and Lewis, 10 years. And that was really kind of the end of the two-person huge
right.
American comedy team. And they did catch a wave. And then Lewis and Martin, I think the great thing is that when they split up, they both actually had more interesting careers.
They did. Let's talk about that. Michael Phillips in the studio, the Chicago Tribune film critic, as we're talking about the legacy of Jerry Lewis. You know, he'll be forever known for his role in Nutty Professor. I mean, that was sort of his go-to. 1963. That was, I mean, it grossed something like $20 million at the time, which was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a hit. This is really his only bona fide hit.
Well, a huge hit, and he went into it with a kind of an unparalleled sweetheart deal with Paramount. I mean, he got $10 million for seven pictures, I think, roughly. And that was a ton of money at the time. And he got a total hands-off creative freedom. And that's why those movies are so kind of, you know, a lot of them are just weirdly self-indulgent. And it's just literally just gag, 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 gag. You know, 7-minute gag followed by a 10-minute pantomime sequence. I mean, these are not conventional movies for the time. But he kind of had his audience, and he found a new audience. Nutty Professor, man. I mean, if anyone has not seen that yet, it's my favorite screen version of Jekyll and Hyde, including the serious ones. And that is, I would actually say this, Justin, if people always talk about how comedy never gets recognized with the Academy Awards, the best comic performance never to get nominated for an Oscar, Jerry Lewis and that dual role in that.
And
Professor.
He is, I mean, it is stark. I mean, he does a great job of being, using his ability as physical comedy to be the nerd in one sense, and then to completely morph his body into something entirely different.
And this was the brilliant thing, right? The other character, Buddy Love, this greasy lounge singer, and he's a little bit Sinatra, he's a little bit Dean Martin, he's about 50% himself.
I was going to say, how much of that was Dean Martin?
Dean, at the time, everybody thought it was all Dean, like he was getting back at Dean, you know, but it's really more like there's a much more dangerous side to this Buddy Love character, more like Sinatra and a lot more like Lewis
we
himself.
Have a little Buddy Love. I'm going to set it up. How do you want to set this up? This is a clip from him in the middle of the movie.
Oh, this is a great scene. Well, he's basically romancing, i.e., you know, and his idea of romance is more like date rape as we would characterize it today, but he's romancing Stella Stevens, and this is Julius Kelp, the nerdy chemistry professor, is now transformed into smoothie Buddy Love, and here he is going to romance.
Hold it a second. Hold it. We'll make our own music, gorgeous. Just hold it. You and you stay. Tubby, you go rest your thumbs. I'll drive. Sweetie, go get your lips pressed. Split.
Will you listen?
Shh. You listen. Sit down here. And if you listen, you'll be thrilled. Believe you me. Sit and listen and watch. Mood is wrong. Mood is wrong. Innkeeper. Got sexy lights? Lay it on me. Better. Better. Now watch, baby. Every move a picture.
That black magic has me in its spell.
So there you go, a little Buddy Love doing his thing.
I just love that. Every room I walk into these days, Justin, I just say, "Mood is wrong. Mood is wrong."
Well, Michael, I'm interested because, you know, it's such a there's this swath of time that is missing from Jerry Lewis's career where he's having these amazing movie, 1963. He's going to be a star. He's going to continue. But he kind of falls off in this way that he doesn't know. I don't know if people want to work with him. Or
well, the act, you know, that act. And he, you know, I think if you're a comic, do I call him a genius? I don't know. If you're a comic giant like he was, I don't want to get into genius or not. You have a certain number of tricks. And then at the same time, you have, you know, the world around you spinning forward. And I think by 1965, 66, Lewis really seemed antiquated. You know, the joke was wearing thin, and the multiple roles and the voice, and, you know, that's a tough voice to listen to, frankly. Right. Even singing is more or less straight. But by the late 60s, you know, career kind of started waning. Did a lot of nightclub stuff.
He was in Vegas for a long time.
And, you know, he was never gone for long. And he guested it all over the place, Carol Burnett and all. But then it really wasn't until Martin Scorsese used him in a surprisingly straight role in The King of Comedy with De Niro, where he played kind of himself, but, you know, in the position of Johnny Carson. It was the king of late night television. He was playing fictional Jerry Langford, and he's stalked and kidnapped by Robert De Niro and Sandra Bernhardt. And it's a very dark comedy, and it's just cold as ice. But Lewis is just fantastic in it. It really was like a new guy reborn. And you can just tell, you watch him just sort of reacting to this crazy scenario around him, and he's underplaying every second. And it's like the other stuff Lewis never felt like secure enough to show as an actor? Just mainly less.
And this is fascinating to me because, you know, what I read about today in the obits was a lot of his off-camera personality. That he got a lot of knocks for having a cantankerous... he was just kind of a jerk, you know, and people didn't want, he's tough to work with. And I guess the question is, how much did that play into him not being able to adjust, not being able to get back in, on screen? And because it seems like, I mean, everything you said about comics not adjusting is absolutely correct, except we see tons of comics because they're friendly and nice and they got good connections in Hollywood to keep producing. They just keep doing this stuff.
Well, I think, and Lewis is complicated by the fact that he's not just a comic. He really was the just about the best compensated movie director and movie star at one time in Hollywood. And for him, I think his ego couldn't take the fall. And it was tough. By the time I interviewed him in the mid '90s, I talked to him three times, kind of all around the same damn Yankees national tour, and he was actually very good in that. He played the devil, you know, from old musical Damn Yankees. Right? And he had gone through all kinds of really rough health stuff, but he was in great physical shape. He was singing and dancing. He was 70 at the time. But I had one interview that was really rough, and it was really like I felt like I put my head in the lion's mouth. You know, you hear some interviews, you know, are just, I mean, some people are notoriously difficult, and yes, he was. He pulled out an article from something I'd written the year before, and he point by point goes through everything he hates about it, and he won't let it go, and he's about to kill the interview, you know, and I had some sort of weird instinct like, oh God, I got a bully on my hands. I got to bully this guy right back. And I don't remember how I did it, but I kind of bullied him into staying in the room. And then it was okay. Because we talked about specifics. Like, okay, that cane routine you do where they throw canes at you off stage and you catch them and you throw them at yourself and you're throwing them up in the air. And he was okay on that. He was okay talking about specifics. And that was good. That was good after that. But it was really like a psychodrama interviewing that guy.
Well, I mean, it is an interesting... the reason I want to talk about it tonight, and I think it's interesting, is that, you know, a lot of... elders in comedy are passing away, whether it's, you know, big names where you're like, oh, what a routine. Jerry Lewis is one of these guys where there is, I don't want to say the jury is out, but there's this sort of like question about what the legacy is.
Right.
Is he this genius that did all these great things in movies and changed films forever and comedy routines with what he did? Or is he more of a kind of a jerk who stumbled in and was the worst things we know about Hollywood?
Right, right. And the most a lot of us know of him are really all those hours on the telethon, which was not anybody's finest performance hour. You know, that was that was tough. I think it's really a really fascinating mixture of both. You know, a comic talent can achieve what Lewis achieved at his best with films like The Nutty Professor. Earlier on, before he directed films like Artists and Models, if you've never seen a Martin and Lewis picture, that's the one to see. Artists and Models, really. Shirley MacLaine, early role. Frank Tashlin, who came out of Warner Brothers, you know, Bugs Bunny and all. I mean, a fantastic director who really directed live action like cartoon action in a really, really inventive way. There are really good movies, and there's a hell of a lot of really not very good movies. But if you see what he can do, you know, at his best. I think it's the old question, Justin, how much do we overlook or forgive what we know, what we, in our faces about, you know, Lewis would do things right up until the end when he was on Conan or Jimmy Fallon and just say, women aren't funny, you know, they can't be funny.
Yeah, well, I haven't even brought that up. I mean, he was overtly sexist and racist, misogynistic, I mean, everything up to the end.
You name it, and unrepentant, politically incorrect, you know, to the last. At the time, you know, when Martin and Lewis really popped after World War II, the kind of energy they had was absolutely unpredictable, and it wasn't like any other act. And, you know, how do you explain to people what the Stones or the Beatles were like early on, you know, unless you really hear the music, maybe kind of get a sense of what they came out of. That was really kind of Martin and Lewis.
Well, I mean, you could say for Jerry Lewis, one of a kind. There's no one like that.
And the influences are interesting, right? Jim Carrey, God knows, Jim Carrey at his best, unthinkable without him. Everybody from Martin Short in Second City, half the Saturday Night Live cast. You know, when Lewis was performing Damn Yankees in the 90s, people like Tom Hanks, Spielberg, all these people would come out to dinner with him. Because Lewis used to teach a class called The Total Filmmaker, which is typically egotistic of Lewis to call that. but he was an interesting director, and he invented the video assist playback. I mean the idea of like, okay, I want to see what the scene looked like right now on the set. I don't want to wait for the rushes tomorrow. Back in 1960, this is a long time, and he patented it and made a lot of money on it. But all the directors, Lucas and Spielberg, took that class as students.
Wow.
in college in L.A. So a lot of these guys owe Lewis a debt.
Michael Phillips, the Chicago Tribune film critic, in studio talking about the legacy of Jerry Lewis. Michael, thanks for stopping by. Good to see you, buddy.
Bet.
And thanks for explaining what we need to know about Jerry Lewis.
All right, man.